You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
What is up, my friends? Welcome to the Mile High Hockey Lab. My name is Adrian Hernandez. I'm excited to be in this seat in my wonderful home, as I'm lucky to work from home these days, and set up to talk nothing but Avalanche hockey with you all. So, I'm here today with Jackie K, Evan Liu, and Jacob Wendling. Say hello, everybody.
Hello, hello. Hello.
Awesome. Thank you guys for coming in. I know you guys got the script today, and I'm sure you had, you know, a great idea of what we were going to talk about based on the way the game against San Jose ended for the Colorado Avalanche. Thank you all for joining us. We're going to talk today about Nathan MacKinnon. We're going to talk about congratulating somebody who has been striving for this measure of success his entire career and is yet to do so despite being a Stanley Cup champion. So congratulations to one Nathan MacKinnon, everybody.
Woo-hoo.
Woo! So that's the first thing I want to talk about. If you're listening, please subscribe, like, share with your fellow Avalanche fans. Follow us on Twitter at Mile High Hockey and at Mile High Hockey underscore lab. I just want to talk about Nathan MacKinnon's 100th point. And I'll start with you, Jackie. Were you surprised that Nathan MacKinnon got his 100th point before Mikko Rantanen got his 50th goal?
I don't know. Maybe if you would have asked in the middle of the season, I would have said yes, especially after he missed that month. But definitely when he got to 90, I mean, it's just so much easier to get points. So,
yeah.
Yeah, not really, I guess I'd say. When he started getting close, I'd say definitely not.
Okay. So you're saying once you're closer with points, it's easier because points are easier to get than goals, essentially, is your logic there.
Yeah, exactly.
I got you. Well, I was mostly impressed with the fact that he's able to get 100 points in a season where he's been injured and he's missed quite a few games. Evan, is that how impressive is that to you? And what does that say about how he's been this past month and a half, I guess?
No, it's certainly impressive. And I mean, when you look at there, someone tweeted it out, one of the press writers, I want to say it was the other Evan Rowell, who tweeted out like how many people had missed games. And I think MacKinnon was probably at like 12, I think, or something like that. And then furthermore, I think someone replied to that and was like, you know, hey, he's been close before already, right? I mean, we've already kind of documented that he's been close to
very
points for the last few seasons. And that, you know, COVID shortened season probably didn't help with that. And 99 points that one season. So, you know, it was only a matter of time until he got it. But it was certainly doing it injured for sure. Or not injured, but, you know, missing games because of injuries is also big. So,
yeah, if you miss games, you miss opportunities to score. Yeah.
And that's, so. now you think of, like, what ifs, right? Like,
exactly.
What if he played all the games? Would he be 120
or right. something
like that, you know?
Well, it just goes to show that he's producing at such a high clip towards the end of the season. Jacob, is this kind of like a microcosm of the Avalanche as a whole, given that they've found themselves in contention for a Central Division title for the third straight year, despite the fact that they've seen a lot of key players, not just, you know, bottom six guys, but both on the defensive and offensive side, they've seen guys go down, but yet here they are with a chance to seal their own fate as division supremes again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's pretty easy for Nathan MacKinnon to be a microcosm of the Avalanche in general, like, regardless of what happens, because he's the engine that drives the whole thing. And so, you know, when he was out, that was their lowest moment of the season. It looked, you know, hopeless. They're starting half an AHL lineup. And, you know, as soon as he came back, all of a sudden things turn around. And a couple weeks later, you know, he really starts ramping it up. And all of a sudden the Avs look like the Avs again.
Right.
You know, the thing I think that's most impressive about all of the MacKinnon stats, you know, we're looking at total points. If you look at even strength points, he's fourth in the league, despite only playing 65 games, and most other people on this list have all played 77 or 78 games.
Right.
I think he's so, number one in even strength points per game, like even more than McDavid.
Yeah, points per game. Mm-hmm.
Which so that's, I know a lot of people. Crazy. Yeah, a lot of people take a dig at McDavid because a lot of his points do come on the power play. So if that's a reason to dig at McDavid, then I guess you're right. It's a reason to praise MacKinnon if he's getting his at 5-on-5. I don't know about the logic of that. It does take talent to be really, really legendarily efficient on the power play.
No, I love that as a dig. It's like, yeah, no, it's like an automatic goal as soon as you go on the power play. That's why you're wait. It's like what? Wait, you're
wait, just, what? Yeah,
exactly. I think 5-on-5 scoring is important, though. I agree. Mean, that's how you separate, like,
right,
like points and goals win the game. So it's not like power play is meaningless. But I think if you're trying to compare players, I think what they do at 5-on-5 is more meaningful, or at least more. Like in the player's control, other than like outside factors of getting power plays and this and
right.
that.
Not to mention, it's like the most common situation, right? Like teams just play at 5-on-5 more than they play with the power player on the kill. So
yeah,
better in that scenario means you're better overall. So I can kind of see it. With MacKinnon's overtime goal, he became the franchise leading goal scorer in overtime, basically game winning goals in overtime. I feel like that says a lot about a guy who's a part of a franchise that's had a lot of clutch performers, especially skaters. Outside of Patrick Waugh, do you guys think that this kind of points towards MacKinnon being at least top three clutch, most clutch Avalanche players of all time? I'll start with you, Evan.
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I'll say yes. I'll say yes. Why not? Because, I mean, you throw Waugh in there, obviously, and then you know, you go Joe, and then I'm debating if you put, you know, Forsberg in there as well. I feel like, because I feel like it would be the three, like, skaters, if we're excluding Wall, it would be, you know, Sakic, Forsberg, and MacKinnon, probably.
Right.
So, you know, that there's that. So, and yes, Aaron Pringle, you are absolutely correct. that breakaway gifted us that second point from Aaron Carlson. I mean, thank you, Erik Karlsson, I guess. I mean, you know, he's been getting points for the Sharks, but he also got points for us, so I'll take it.
Yeah, he just kind of dished it out. Poor guy, though. I could tell what he was thinking. I just didn't – those white jerseys, man, they sneak up on you on the road, baby. But
kind of like an Avalanche.
Exactly. Look at that.
I had to go there.
You did, and I'm glad you did. Jacob, what do you think? Where do you put MacKinnon in terms of your rankings of most clutch players in Avalanche franchise history?
I mean, Sakic's one because he's the most clutch player in the history of the NHL. Like, you know, that guy's got, but I think I looked it up earlier. It's 14 overtime points, and second place on that list is Doug Gilmour with 9.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, the question, I guess, is MacKinnon or Waugh for second? It's always hard to compare, you know, goalies to skater. Yeah. I mean, you know, that team won 2. This team has won 1. So I think until this team at least gets 2 titles, you can't put MacKinnon over anybody from that one. So I'll put him 3rd.
All right, that's fair, Jackie. I'll let you get cast your vote.
I kind of think of clutch as something different. I mean, like, good players obviously are there in the big moments, and they're scoring the big goals and everything. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know if I would necessarily say, to me, clutch is like just pulling something out of the sky. Like, and I don't really think that, like, that's MacKinnon. He's doing it with his speed and his
talent.
You see
it coming.
Yeah, you see it coming. Yeah. Like, to me, in the most recent years, one of the most clutch players is Lehkonen. Like, that's the guy that scored enormous goals out of nowhere and has some sort of crazy ability to just score when the spotlight's on him. Like, how he even did that in Montreal, like, it was right after his tribute video and then he scores a goal.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how does this guy do that? So to me,
his life's
like
a movie, no doubt. Yeah, like, his dad is announcing his Stanley Cup game-winning goal for his home country. Like, you're totally right.
That's not to say I don't think that, like, MacKinnon and Rantanen and Makar and our elite players don't have clutch ability, but the most clutch player in the Avs history, I don't know. Like I said, I lean more towards, like, the Lehkonen type performances if I want to say, like, who's the most clutch. So
you're like a Tange guy then, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. Something more in that direction.
Yeah. I'm a Confer person myself. So that's, I think Confer's pretty clutch in terms of your logic. Like,
yeah, no, I see that. He does.
He scores big goals that you just don't see coming. Yeah. And you don't see him coming because typically he's just not that guy. But that's actually not necessarily true this year. And I hope we get to see even more of him in the playoffs in terms of that clutch role heading forward. Somebody I'm looking forward to, really looking forward to seeing how they perform in the playoffs is Alexander Georgiev. And I did the live poll of the week this week, and I did it kind of as a ploy. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to see if my bias would be confirmed. I'll be the first to admit it. And I haven't looked yet, so I'm going to look here in a second. But I think it will be. I feel like Alexander Georgiev has quietly become like the predominant storyline for the Avalanche, and he could be the predominant story of the NHL if the Avalanche are able to repeat on the back of like elite goaltending in the playoffs. So the question I posed on Twitter was, of the story of these storylines, which one have you been most intrigued by? Essentially, McKinnon's 100 points, Rantanen's 50 goals, or Alexander Georgiev's elevated play. Jackie, I left an other. So if you have another one that you want to add that I didn't say, by all means, but what would you have chosen in this poll, or what did you choose?
I actually picked other, and then I thought about it because I feel like the only storyline of this season has been the injuries. I'm not saying that that was a good storyline. I would say like my other is anything but injury storyline would be my favorite. It is nice though here at the end of the year that we have something to focus on rather than like the minute by minute, is Landeskog ever going to play?
Right.
So it's nice that we're like focusing on McKinnon and.
That's a good point.
Of the three options, I would pick Rantanen, and I said it on last week's show. I just think 50 goals is more meaningful, Mark, I guess, or a little bit more difficult to achieve.
Yeah.
So that's something I've really been looking at ever since he passed even like 30. So.
Well, yeah, because he did like it pretty early ago. On. Yeah.
Yeah, or even more than 2 months. Yeah. You're right. So I've kind of thought about like, well, what if he could get to 50? So I guess for me, that's the one I've been focusing on, but. When you mean Georgiev specifically, I don't know if he's gotten the attention that he deserves because it just seems like nobody argues about him. Nobody complains about him, which is a good thing, but they're not really like praising him either. It's just kind of like a given, like, oh, Georgiev's going to be solid and that's great. And we can count on that, which is great. But I guess it would be nice if he did become a bigger storyline.
Yeah, I liken it almost to like, I don't know, the way Bronco fans kind of overlook the best player on their team constantly. And it's usually somebody on the offensive line, because for a very long time, the Broncos had a dominant offensive line. And it was like, if you went there, you became the best guard in the league. And I feel like the Avalanche have a similar thing going right now with goalies, where it's like, if you're a guy who's been on the fringe of being a starter and you just haven't gotten your shot, go to Colorado and you're going to be a Vezina caliber type goalie. And I think that kind of shades how we view Georgiev's success, because we've seen guys come in. We've already seen Grubauer come and go. We've already seen Kemper come and go, both of them with their own version of their best success. So I feel like that kind of clouds people's interpretation of just how good Georgiev has been compared to expectation. Evan, what do you think? What was your answer to the poll?
I'll admit I voted for McKinnon's 100th. Okay. Just because of the, I mean,
don't have shame in that.
Look at the celebration last night. Yeah, I mean,
that was pretty cool. You know,
that was a good celebration. I haven't seen that much, not class. I haven't seen that much
passion,
emotion, I guess, out of passion. There you go. Out of him in a little while.
Since EJ tackled him pretty much.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like part of it could be just because of the win, but then again, it's also a win in overtime against the very much struggling San Jose Sharks.
So yeah.
I don't know. But point being, like, you know, that was special, and you know whatnot. And I'll kind of add on my points about your comments on Georgiev, because I mean, you are right. It was proven last year. It's been proven before that the Avs with this defense, they can have quote unquote mediocre goaltending and, you know, be fine.
Yeah.
We've seen that already. And so now if we're going in the playoffs with a healthy defense and a really good goaltender like Georgiev, they're going to lock it down better. Yes.
See, and that's what I still feel like that's so overlooked about last year's team. You know, everybody does talk about Lehkonen and McKinnon and the top line and how successful the top line and Cale Makar. But I think the real story of the Avalanche was how well they played defensively, and specifically in game six of the Stanley Cup final, how they played defensively in the third period. That was arguably what won them a Stanley Cup, at least in that moment and in that context. So I agree with you. And like you pointed towards, Georgiev isn't just a mediocre goalie.
No,
and we may have had two just mediocre goalies, as it appears. I know it's only been a couple years for Grubauer and one for Kemper, but nonetheless, it still feels like they're not quite the same as they were when they were with us. Whereas I feel like Georgiev would have a future elsewhere, even if he wasn't behind a good defense. And yeah, I feel comfortable with him in net. Yeah.
I do too. And the thing too, when you look at last year with Kemper missing so many games as he did during that run too, Pavel Francouz stepped up in a huge way. So now you have a great 1-2 pairing, and you have both of them, you know, that could be running towards the playoffs. Hopefully Francouz is, you know,
on the mend. Yeah.
He's been skating, and, you know, he's obviously with the team right now in California. So hopefully, you know, he'll start progressing. Maybe we'll play in the last week sometime, maybe in one of those two games in the back-to-back with Winnipeg and Nashville next week. But those two are great for us. Not for Wood, that he's healthy. So.
Exactly. Well, and just to get back to your McKinnon point, we talked, and I don't know if it was last episode or the one before, but we talked about whether or not it meant a lot to him within the scope of his, you know, competitive fire and kind of what he takes into his mentality. And I think you don't have to look any further for proof of McKinnon being excited about his 100th point than the picture of him with the puck, which is like total full childlike grin. Almost reminded me of the grin he had when he's holding the cup next to his childhood net. So it did look like exactly. Yeah. Evan, that's a great impression of it. So Jacob, what was your answer to the poll, and tell me why?
I went with Georgiev. Part of it was, I also agree that I don't think he's got the due he deserves most of this year. Although I think this week that's changing. I think he was at the top of Pierre LeBrun's article in The Athletic this week, as far as offseason trade additions. He gave the Avs an A+ for it. Like, you're starting to see a lot more people take notice. And I think part of it is they looked at, the league leaders, like, holy crap, this guy's second in wins. He's fourth in save percentage.
First in road wins.
We talked about the Avs as a defensive team, and they are. I think that's essentially what their identity has been this year, partially because for part of the year they didn't have the horses to, you know, be a score-first team. But I think it's kind of notable that he's faced the fifth most shots in the entire NHL, and there's only four teams in the NHL who have given up less goals than the entire Avalanche team. And so, the defense has been good, but it hasn't been up to, I think, its usual snuff this year. And so, in the roundtable this week, Ezra and I had a stealth argument between, Mikko and Georgiev as the team's MVP, because it comes down to kind of, do you think that Mikko's goal scoring has been, the driving force this year, or has it been Georgiev backstopping them all those nights that, maybe they didn't deserve to win?
That's a great question. Maybe that'll be the poll next week, because that's a very good question, because I tend to think that a goaltender is slightly more important just in terms of the overall outcome of the game, because there's not a lot of games that end 1-0. So, and by that logic, it's a culmination of offensive plays, whereas goaltending, it's one person in the net the entire night if it's going the right way.
Right.
So if you want your night to not end early, it should be going well for you. And Jacob, you mentioned that Pierre LeBrun gave the Avs an A+ for the trade of Georgiev. But to me, it's the trade and sign, because they got him for 3 years at a very cheap price. So now it looks, and I this is how I posed it in the script. I said, does Georgiev represent Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland's best pickup? Is that the masterpiece for him? If they win the Stanley Cup, that's a no doubter, right? If he becomes a Stanley Cup winning goaltender in the one season he's been here and has two more years, the answer to that question is yes. But Jackie, what do you think?
Well, if we're talking about the last offseason, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's really interesting, because to separate out the goaltender because what we've talked about is a lot of system-based stuff, too. Like, the Avs are a suppressive team, and they need someone good, but he doesn't have to be great in net. And so that could lead into an interesting conversation of, like, you know, the goalies that stand on their heads and the ones that are, like, more visibly stealing games get the credit. And, you know, is somebody that's good and solid is great because of his team? Like, let's say the Bruins goaltenders as well, their statistics are amazing. Are they the MVPs of their team because of the seasons that they've had, or is it more of a team-based thing? But that's like a whole another road to go down. But if we're talking about like the move that the Avs made over the offseason, definitely Georgiev is tops on that list. If we're talking about like building the cup team and everything, I'd say Nichushkin, but I also don't think that was like
predictable.
I think they got a little lucky.
They didn't make that move going, this is what's going to win us the next Stanley Cup.
You know, obviously, like the best trades they made were like Taze for the 2 second round picks, or I'd even say Burakovsky. I think they got a lot out of him for a second and a third. So if we're going back that far, then I would throw a couple other names in the conversation. But as far as like near term, definitely Georgiev was a big addition for them.
Yeah. And like I said, I bring it back to his contract because they got him for 3 years at 3.4 million. So that's
it's kind of like the Grubauer thing because he was an RFA as well. Mm-hmm. But I guess the problem then becomes, are they going to give Georgiev that $30 million contract that they wouldn't give Grubauer and Kemper? Or is it going to be like, okay, we're going to go for the next guy and hope to keep him around for 3 years?
Yeah, but going back to what we've all mentioned about the process or the system, the defensive prowess, do the Avs always hold the bargaining chip when it comes to these goaltenders? And is it going to put them in the position to constantly be getting the backup of somebody who's the best goalie in the league, who also looks like they could be a starter at a cheap rate? I feel like you could just keep running it back until it doesn't work. And I feel like if you don't, you're kind of silly, because if it isn't broke, you don't fix it.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at the highest paid goalies in the NHL, like, that's a cautionary tale more than it is a list best, you know, goalies in the league. And so, like, you know, part of me wonders, is this, you know, this idea that, you know, basically you don't pay goalies unless you have a Vasilevskiy or a Shesterkin, it's better to just kind of play the goalie roulette every year and try to find the best value you possibly can. I wonder if that's an artifact of this current cap regime, and if that's going to be the case going forward as the cap goes up. Because then, you know, when Georgiev, you know, his contract is up, maybe the cap's up another $5 million, and all of a sudden, you know, hey, you can keep an extra couple million to make sure you get a goalie you trust.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially because, like, the upper echelon of goalies, they get good forward numbers. Like, we're talking $10 million. You know, that's three players in your bottom six or in a defensive grouping. So it literally sucks up the depth that you might have, especially if on top of that you have forwards and defenders that you're paying at a premium as well, which I think is the situation for the Avalanche. Not necessarily at a premium, but at value for sure. Pretty much right now. I don't think anyone's really not getting paid what they're worth for the Avalanche. Or am I wrong about that? Can you think of anybody who's not getting paid what they're worth maybe right now? Maybe Compher?
I mean, Cale Makar.
Always Cale Makar.
I'd say Byram. I mean, that's ELC. I mean, that's because of ELC.
Right.
You know, does that really count or not? I think Rodriguez has been better than $2 million. That's
true. I would agree with that.
Yeah, Compher's outplayed his $3.5 million for this, you know, last year.
But he was pretty close to that, or maybe below it, leading up to this season, probably. So, yeah, I'd say that kind of averages out. That's an interesting thing, because I agree with you, Jackie. Byram might be the most clear cut answer to that because of his ELC. How do you think he'll be prioritized once that ELC is up? Is he going to be one of those guys that gets a long term contract? I hope so.
I would love that. I don't know if they can pay that, though. I mean, honestly, it might have to be like $8 million to sign him, like 7-8 years. Yeah. And we're talking short term. Like, he has the comp The comparables for like four and a half, even on like a 2-year deal. So right. It's not going to be cheap. And the thing is it'll be interesting because the RFAs usually are the last to sign. Like we're talking like September, but the Avs also need to know that number.
Yeah, they do.
Like, could they really go through the summer and just have no idea how much that's going to cost? Like Newhook, they could probably wait.
Not your typical RFA. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be around like probably 2, at most 3, but like, how do you budget for Byram? So I'd love to see that get done sooner than later, but that's obviously going to be a tough one. So like, I think the Avs have done well not bridging guys. I mean, can you imagine if they had bridged Makar? Like, what a disaster that would have been.
Yeah.
But I just honestly don't even know if they can.
Yeah.
Can pay Byram. Like, I mean, it's definitely going to be more than 7 to sign him long term.
Well, you know, you look at the talk been like he's going to replace Devon Taves, and once Taves' contract is up, and he'll eat some of Taves' contract up. Am I wrong about that or no?
That's probably their thinking. I don't see how they can sign Taze long term. And I know
Taze only makes like 4 million.
Half our
too,
listeners
right?
out yeah. there are screaming, you trade Gerard, that's how you keep Taze. But he's not going to make $5 million. Yeah. Taze is gonna make that $8 million. And it's not gonna be over 4 years, it's gonna be over 7 or 8 years. And like, where are they going to find the money for that? Even if they got rid of Gerard, which, first of all, you'd be getting rid of him for another player you have to pay, and then you'd have to pay to replace him. So it's not like free $5 million if you get rid of Gerard. So I just don't see that as a viable solution to the how are they going to pay these guys problem.
Yeah, I've never heard of trading away a good contract to make way for other contracts, but... That's just
I don't think the Avs are thinking that way too. Yeah. It's like who needs cost controlled top four defensemen more than the Avs?
Exactly.
Right.
Devon Taves is making $4.1 million through next season. So that's gonna be not what he's paid in 2025. So you're definitely onto something. And Evan, I hope you're right. I hope the talks about Byram being slated to roll into a pairing with Makar, because man, that would be super entertaining at the very least. Yeah. And I will say that of the two, they're two of my favorite defenders because they shoot so well, but they have different styles. So I feel like they would work really well in a pairing on the offensive side, especially. And I think that Byram could learn a lot from Makar defensively in terms of his edge work and stuff like that. Because I do think they're both really good skaters too. So, I mean, obviously he can't skate like Makar because very few people can, but you pair up with him and you start to pick up on little things like that. I just worry, is it another Newhook Kadri situation? I don't think it is, because we've seen Byram be the real deal already, and Newhook's just shown glimpses of that. So I'm with you. That would be really cool, and I think it would be the responsible thing to do. And then you can go find another bottom six defender in free agency or at the trade deadline and yada yada. So I'm with you on that. I will say though, of the people that are not being paid what they're worth, maybe it is Mikko Rantanen right now, just even though he's making good money. I feel like the guy, I mean, as of late, he's struggled, but I feel like it has a lot to do with because of how close he is to 50. Do any of you feel like the fact that he is at 49 is kind of like not so good in certain scenarios for the team? Because it seems like they're focusing on getting him the puck.
On the power play, especially.
Look at last night.
Yeah.
Look at last night.
It hurts the power play. I think it does.
Yeah.
They should have been feeding him more on the power play, though. Like, his shot's better than McKinnon's, so I don't know. I think maybe a little happy medium, because it does telegraph it to the other team. I mean, come on, like, the goalie is going to look for Mikko 96. To take the shot, well, but
Altitude had, like, a circle around Mikko the entire time he was so on dumb. The ice. Yeah.
It reminds me of like when Iginla, I don't remember what the milestone was. It was like 630 goals or something, whatever it was. It kind of reminds me of that, but it's like he's a little bit more on top of his game, more than like Iginla at the time, which was like painful that they just kept giving the puck to him,
I think he ended up scoring like off a skate and two, like off his own skate, like not paying attention. Like he's looking the other way and it like bounced off of him and went in. I'm pretty sure how he got that final, that goal. So that's really funny. I agree with you. It's like they're just too focused on it. And if you think about it, he's gotten 50 by just playing. He's gotten 49 by just playing. So let's just play and he's going to get 50. Just the numbers are there. So, Evan, I asked Jackie earlier about if you were surprised that McKinnon got to 100 points before Rantanen got to 50. Pretend I asked you that like 2 weeks ago, because based on Jackie's answer, what would your answer have been then?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I probably would have said, yeah, because I think for 2 weeks, he's been stuck on like 48 now, right?
Yeah.
47, 48, something like that. So, yeah. I mean, he could have gotten 50, I know, a couple weeks back against Arizona and that home and home. And then
when he hit a gosh darn referee.
The referee, yeah. Yeah. Anaheim, who else have they played? Oh, and then obviously Dallas and Minnesota too. So, yeah, it definitely would have been possible. Definitely feel like it could have been possible like 2 weeks ago. But alas, here we are.
Yeah.
And so hopefully you get to tomorrow night.
I know, I was gonna say at least we pretty much know both will happen. And if both don't happen, we should be concerned a little bit, I feel like.
Turn on the alarm bells.
Yeah. I mean, not overly concerned, but like it is scary when a guy who's got 49 goals just suddenly loses his scoring touch. What do you think, Jacob?
Maybe. I mean, once we get to the playoffs, you know, he doesn't have 49 goals anymore. He has
zero.
Maybe pressure disappears because all, you know, he's just chasing a number at that point. So once you remove the number, hopefully that will remove the stress to chase it.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, and that's why I was like hoping so bad that he would have gotten that one that went off the crossbar, because not only was it like would have it gotten it out of the way, but it was a pretty goal. It was like Miko, vintage Miko. It would have been. You could have put a picture of it in the mausoleum. Like it would have been beautiful. So, you know, you mentioned that the regular season success is nice, but it's kind of all about the playoffs. Jackie, are you nervous, excited about this potential playoff? Well, not potential, this upcoming playoff run. And if your answer is both, tell me what makes you nervous and tell me what brings you peace of mind.
Yeah, I guess both is fair to say. I am generally more of an anxious person, so that's just the way I am. I would say the peace of mind part is just that they've done it. Like, it's just, it removes just that, I don't know, that just the anxiety that, like, you just feel like it's never going to happen, or, like, is this their last chance? And, you know, just all those thoughts. Like, we've experienced it, and it would be awesome to experience it again, but... I mean, we'll see when we get there, right? Maybe my answer will be different when we're down in a series or something. But I kind of feel both ways. Like, excited just because that's, like, the best time of year. That's why we grinded through these 8 months or however long it's been. It's to get to that point to see what they can do. But I don't necessarily think they have the team to win it all again. Like their elite players are always capable of anything. So I'm not going to write it off, but I don't think they're quite where they were last year. And like even Bednar admitted it.
He did,
I thought it was kind of interesting that, I mean, he also said that that's not to mean that he doesn't believe they can do it, but like last year's team was stacked. Like they finally had incredible depth. And this year it's just not the same. Plus, like, how many, injured, how much more of the injury curse do we have to deal with? So, I don't know. I guess I'm just looking forward to maybe a little bit less stressful playoff experience, but we'll see when we get in the middle of it. It's easy to say that now.
I hate to break it to you, but last one was pretty not stressful given they only lost like 4 games.
I know, but it was so stressful.
I know.
Series got real stressful.
Yeah, I think the anticipation of winning another one is why it was so stressful, but I think this one is going to be more stressful because if the Avs do win, it's going to be they're going
like
to have lost
sevens.
Yeah, they're
going
like to have to probably slay that dragon. This time around, and you know, I'm like you, Jackie. I'm typically nervous, so I think I'll be nervous this year because I feel like everybody's trying to take the crown, and there's a little more bragging rights right now. Anybody who beats us, who eliminates us, is gonna immediately think they're the next champ. So I'm nervous, mostly. I'm excited, and I can kind of lean on, like you said, that they've done it before. I will agree with you, though, and agree with Bednar, that they're going to have to do it a different kind of way this season. They're not going to do it the same way they did last year. I think that's what he meant when he said, like, it's dangerous to compare them, because if you think that this team is just going to breeze through rounds like last year's team did, I think you're in for a surprise. Evan, what do you think? Are you nervous or are you excited?
Both, obviously. Yeah. I'm like everybody else. Yeah, we were definitely spoiled with that.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
we were definitely spoiled with that. But I mean, I know a few days ago I went back through my phone and looked through YouTube and was looking at pictures and videos of the playoff runs and just like the emotions and the scenes and the environment, and I was like, whoo, I can run through a brick wall right now.
Yeah.
Super. So, I mean, there's always that excitement. It's the best, it's one of the best times of the year watching playoff hockey. And, you know, it's still going to be fun regardless. It's, you know, as we've already kind of stated, it's not going to be as easy as last time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're still dealing with injuries. Teams are going to be better. I'm calling it now. They're not going to sweep their way to the first round this time around.
No first round sweep, huh? Even if it's Seattle?
No, definitely if it's not Seattle.
Interesting.
They lost twice to Seattle.
Yeah. I hear that, but I feel like goaltending is big in the playoffs. And I feel like as much as I love Grubby, I feel like he's not quite what he's getting paid to be.
Especially with Martin Jones too.
Yeah. Sign me up for Martin Jones and Philip Grubauer and get Connor Hellebuck the hell away from me. That's what I say.
I think that is a fair take.
I mean, but no, I'm excited. It's always fun. And you know, I think just the kind of general thing that we could say to, you know, Avs faithful is, you know, we need to like lower our expectations, because I can already see absolutely blowing.
Good luck.
I can already see them blowing up, like after they lose, like, you know, game two in the second round, like they did last year. Oh, the series is over. This is it. It's like, no, this isn't the same team, right? Yeah. We're still dealing with injuries. But actually, let me go back to that point. Actually, the injury part, because you have these four guys that are going on the trip now.
Yeah.
Landeskog is, you know, he's still obviously a ways back. I'm hopeful for the first round, but I'm hopeful, but I don't want to get my hopes up too high.
I feel like game five.
Game five, I could see that, like in the latter stages of the first round, if it gets to that point, maybe. But like Manson should hopefully be good. I know he's been going back. Lekkonen just started skating with a stick again. Francois has been doing better, so. You know, if as long as you get even three of those four guys, that's going to be big. So that only elevates the excitement even more in my mind.
Yeah. I say game five because game five is typically like the swing game in a series. And if you're going to insert your captain into the lineup anywhere inside of a first round series and you don't sweep, it's probably game five. And if not the first round, I feel the exact same way about round two if they are lucky or fortunate enough to be in the second round. Jacob, I'll end with you. I'm pretty sure you're excited, but tell me, are you excited, nervous, both? What's up?
I mean, if you're not nervous during the Stanley Cup playoffs, like, are you really a hockey fan? Like, there's always going to be some level of nerves. But, like, if we're comparing it to last year, I don't even think that the nerves are remotely close to last year. You know, last year they had to win it. Like, they had the best second line center in the league who was on his way out in free agency. They had Burakovsky who was playing well, and he was going to be on his way out. You know, Manson was an expiring contract. We didn't know what was going to happen with them. They pushed all of their assets to the middle of the table to get him and Lekkonen and Kemper. And Kemper was a free agent. And so this year it's different. It's a little more mellow. You know, you're not seeing all these markers saying, you know, look at this advanced metric that shows that the Avs are, you know, one of the 10 best regular season teams ever. Or, you know, felt like 538 was publishing that every other month last year. So I think it's, you know, a little more mellow. I'm generally excited because I think that for the first time really in this, you know, MacKinnon era, the Avalanche have a goalie who could steal a series, and that has really never been the case before. And it just adds a new element to this Avalanche attack that, you know, you're so focused on not getting beat by McKinnon and, you know, Rantanen and Makar. Now, all of a sudden, hey, maybe you shut those guys down and you still lose because you can't beat Georgie. And that's it. That's the whole series.
Well, we remember what it was like to have a goalie like that. And it is different. Like you explained, like you watch differently when you have a goalie like that, because you expect him to not give up a goal the entire game. And I feel like the obviously Patrick Waugh is the guy we're talking about here, but I mean, if you can instill that kind of confidence, not in your fan base, because no offense, who cares, but in your defense, in your defensive group, if they feel like if they do their job, there's a good chance other teams not going to score at all. That's huge for a team inside the playoffs, especially one that's as dynamic and potentially explosive as the Colorado Avalanche. So
yeah, I think it's, you know, it gives the team the confidence to play the style that Bednar has kind of been pushing them to play. You know, like you said, this is not a team that can just go out and outscore their opponent on every single night. Like, there's a reason that he's been emphasizing the checking portion of the game, you know, the last month or so every time their play takes a dip. Because, you know, the way that they have to win is they have to grind people down and then allow, you know, their speed to take control of the game when the game allows it. They can't, you know, they can't dominate for, you know, 15 minutes at a time way that they did last year. They've got to kind of pick and choose their spots.
They're going to have to lean on him a little bit. You're right about that. And, you know, a big factor in how and who the Avalanche will face in the first round of the playoffs will be pretty much all determined this week and in the following week. And of the final games, the Avs pretty much play two playoff bound teams, and then I think it's four. They got six games left. I don't know, I can't remember, but nonetheless, six. Let's see, I wrote it down. Final six games, yeah, four. So I wrote down if they win 4-6, that's probably enough to win the Central Division. Jackie, how confident are you in the Avalanche? Maybe not winning 4-6, but winning the Central Division.
Well, I'm one that has probably focused on them winning the division less, even though after playing those Dallas and Minnesota games, it does sound pretty appealing to not play them in the first round, even though that would be their life for the second round. But, you know, I definitely would rather have, like, Seattle over those two, so... Mm-hmm. Do I think they're going to, you know, if they play well in LA, maybe that's the key for me, because, if I'm not mistaken, they've lost their other two games against LA.
Yeah.
And, they play a type of game that I think, when the Avs are playing well, I mean, when the Avs are playing well, they can beat anybody, but that'll kind of show you where the Avs are at right now, if they can play well in that game in LA and win that one. And so I'm still kind of on the fence right now, because it also depends on what the other two teams do as well. Like I said before, it just Dallas has such a because Minnesota then just lost to Vegas twice, and Dallas has just such an easier schedule. I still think that they're the ones to beat and not Minnesota. So like I said, can I leave the answers undecided and depending on how they play against LA?
Yeah, if I absolutely.
Think they're going to win a division or
not. Yeah. Yes, you can absolutely leave it open-ended like that. Because, I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about predictions here. So you're totally fine with that. I will say, I feel like it's interesting that the Jets, they play the Wild and the Avalanche the last two games of their season. So, like, they're in kind of a weird situation. Because imagine that they are sitting somewhere in that first wild card spot, but they'd rather play the Wild, who end up stealing the Central from the Avalanche, than the you know, being in their division. And so is that a situation where a team like them tanks to get a specific seed? Does anybody do that in the NHL?
They're hanging on by such a thread, there's like no way that they could. You know, if you were
it would be the very last game of the season, so they would know if it mattered, essentially.
Well, the other thing is that Nashville also plays, I think, us in Minnesota. And if it comes down between them and Nashville, the they really can't. Yeah, the Jets And Nashville, I think Minnesota and us play those two, the last two games. They're just offset by a game. So I don't know. It's probably going to be a race between them. I just think Calgary's so done. I mean, to lose at home to Chicago.
They play the Jets tonight. It's actually a pretty big game if you think
about
it. That's
true. That's true. And watch, they'll come out and win that one and just muddy the waters again. Well,
that's so crazy. Like Winnipeg's last five games, Calgary, Nashville, Sharks, Jet or Wild, Avalanche. So they play, they play four potential, at least four potential playoff teams. The Preds and the Flames are still kind of chasing, but I just think it's interesting. They have like power. They could win games and then have all the power. But Evan, you know, you tell me, is this something that you think the Avalanche can pull off in winning the Central Division?
I think so. And, you know, I'm looking at our own Casey Dim's tweet, because he tweeted out like every single team in the West and like how many games they have left and who they're playing and things like that. Yeah. The Avs have, out of the 10 teams that he listed, have the fourth easiest okay. schedule remaining. So below them is Minnesota, Seattle, Calgary, and Edmonton. They have easier schedules than the Avs. Nashville is first on that list. They have the hardest schedule. I mean, as you already kind of said, Dallas is right above the Avs, right in the middle. So, you know, they're as has been,
they have the easiest road is what you're laying out. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to say that, but I was going to say that like they're really tight, just like as it has been in the standings for the last little while now. So it's going to come right down to the wire. I don't think we're going to know until the last day, to be honest, doesn't everybody play on the last day?
I think so. I know the Avs do because of the Predators makeup game.
Yeah, because of the Preds makeup game. So I'm looking at the schedule really quickly. Because, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, no, just kidding. There's only two games that night. It's us then game out east. So maybe we'll know then on Thursday night.
See lots of young guys playing in that game, hopefully. And it won't matter because we'll have won the division by beating the Jets on Thursday, April 13th.
Here's the thing too, is that the Predators, they play Minnesota on the 13th and then they welcome us on the 14th.
Yeah, back to back.
Their schedule is going to be so hard.
That's why I say that about the Avs, because that's a back to back too for them, the Jets and then the Preds on the 13th and 14th.
So, I mean, both teams are going to be feeling the same way, except the Avs are going to be traveling, which, you know, ugh. But, you know, I think we're going to know. I think we're going to know by the end of Thursday night, because I mean, both Minnesota and Dallas play that Thursday night. Both of their games are going to finish either before or right at the same time as the Avs.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they're all 6 PM puck drops. So I mean, I guess they're going to find out. We're going to find out all together.
What's funny is, you know, we did that poll. I think it was like March 20 something. We did a poll about, they had like 42 points left. They had to win X amount to win 70%, X amount to win 60, X amount to win 50%. We asked fans how they thought the Avs would finish in those 42 points. And they all went with kind of the middle of the road where the Avs had been ticking along, which is about just over 60%, which is where they're at now. It's 64%, I think, is where they're at point percentage wise. But in that time frame, they're actually just three wins away from being at a 70% point clip. And we predicted that, well, I predicted that 104 points would win them the division. So that might be pretty spot on. And it's telling again of how successful the Avs have been later on in this regular season. Jacob, are you confident in the Avalanche winning the Central Division?
Yeah, I mean, I've been confident since January when I wrote they control their own destiny. They're playing as good as any team in the NHL right now. You know, their remaining opponents aren't that difficult. And, you know, like you said, like that Winnipeg game, it's Winnipeg's last game of the regular season. Maybe their playoff position is determined at that point and they rest starters. That Edmonton game that they play, that's their second to last game of the season. And, you know, depending on how the 2-3 or 1-2-3 seeds in that division shake out, who knows, maybe they're resting starters at that point. So like the schedule on paper already looks good enough for the Avs, mm-hmm. and then you factor in the fact that, you know, the good teams that they're playing, they might be done, you know, for all mm-hmm. intents and purposes when we get to those games. And so I, you know, they have come this far. I'm not about to back off now.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I saw they win the division when they were like 18 points out of the division.
Yeah. So. Yeah, when they had to jump like four teams still. Yeah, you definitely called it. If they do it, we all owe you a bottle of blue, as they say on altitude. So I just like to end the show by opening up the conversation to you all and see if we haven't touched on anything. And I know, Jackie, you mentioned in our little chat that you wanted to talk a little bit about some of the acquisitions the Avalanche have made in regards to some of the pickups from college hockey. You want to get into that?
Yes. So yeah, right after we recorded last week, then the Avs right decided to sign three different college free agents to entry level contracts. And so that's a lot of activity for them.
For sure.
Two of them have already played with the Eagles and looked pretty good doing so, even though this year is definitely just like a little taste because they're not signed in the NHL for this year, so there's no chance that the Avs can call them up even for like the last game or anything
like
that.
Like Myers last year.
Yeah,
much.
Exactly. Like when they signed him, he got all the promises, and so he got those five games and the NHL contract and everything. So these guys aren't at that level, but you know, I just think it's we all know that they're doing this because they traded a lot of prospects and picks pool. Away. But I don't think it's that simple. And I think kind of like the analysis has ended there. And like who doesn't like free assets? So it's nice mm-hmm. that for whatever reason that these guys had options and decided to sign with us and come here. But I feel like it's a little bit of like trying to shortcut a proper development system. Like mm-hmm. it shouldn't be instead of, it should be in addition to. And like he'd say, well, they just got rid of everybody, so like what else can they do? But they like don't sign rookie camp invites. They haven't signed their own drafted prospect since Olausen. They only was that Russian defenseman Zhuravlyov they signed, but other than him, for 2 years they haven't even signed a drafted prospect.
Wow.
You know, like they chose not to sign Nils Amon, and he goes on and plays with Vancouver. And like in hindsight, I wasn't that high on him. I'm not going to say like, oh, that was a massive mistake. But it's like, right. if you're looking for guys to sign because you have such little in your prospect pool, like you're even choosing not to sign the ones
your
you
draft
have.
Picks. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it sounds like they're circumventing not having draft picks, but you're saying, well, that's kind of also not true because they trade away their own picks.
Right. Or yeah. like other college guys that they didn't sign, like Nicky Lieberman. He had a successful 5-year career mm-hmm. as a defenseman for Notre Dame. Like I wouldn't say I'm like the highest on him, but like why move away from a guy that's been in your system for 7 years and then just roll the dice on a free agent? So to me, like I said, like I have no problem with them signing these free agents. I mean, other than the fact that they were scratching like Sampo Ranta to get these guys in the lineup. And that's also another like counterproductive, like why does it have to be instead of like, so mm-hmm. like we're done with Ranta now. He's just going to have to get waived in the fall. Like he's the guy that if you see any sort of NHL future for him, he's the one that needs like the call ups and the time. And so I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. I just think the analysis has been really shallow out there. And I just wanted to kind of, just bring up a few more of these points that I still think the Avs have a long way to go into rebuilding a proper development system. And so I just, like I said, I'd rather have it be in addition to and not instead of.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because my rebuttal, like I said, was going to be, well, this is what you have to do when you don't have draft picks. But like you said, you should be doing both. You should be signing the hottest leading goal scorer in the NCAA and have draft picks in your pocket and prospects in the pool. But I mean,
or rookie camp. They don't sign anybody from rookie camp. Yeah. Like, well, what's the point? It's been 5 years since they signed O'Connor, and like they signed him because his dad played with Craig Billington. Yeah. So like, when was the last time they actually brought in like a rookie and and it was on the table for them to impress enough to get a contract.
Yeah. I will say that what's his name? Sam Malinsky, right? Is that him? Yeah, he's been he's looked really good.
And yeah, he did a good job. Definitely got a couple of points on the power play. So yeah, I mean, there's good reason to you know get excited about him. But the other thing is he's going to be 25 in the fall, so there isn't a whole lot of development left. It's just a matter of like, is he going to be good enough? Like once he gets used to the pro game and everything, it's just is he going to be good enough? Like it's just kind of like an either or at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, do. I
good though, so I'm hopeful. You know, I'm hoping to try and get to one of these last Eagles games here next weekend to see if I can check them out. But you know, I hope that's all you can really do now at this point, as you already said, Jackie. So the best we can do.
Nice. All right. What about you two, Evan, Jacob? You guys have anything you want to touch on, or is it bold prediction time?
I'm trying to think if there is anything to touch on. I think here, I'll just do this instead. Can we just do this again sometime?
Is that a flag of a tweet of your of our tweet
that says the Colorado Avalanche have won the Stanley Cup?
So cool. You have to send me one of those. That's awesome.
Yeah, that is pretty neat.
Yeah, that's cool.
You didn't get put in the Hall of Fame, did you?
Yeah.
I said you didn't get put in the Hall of Fame, did you? You weren't one of those.
Yeah.
No. They should have. They should have picked us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. You know what's funny is going back to what Jackie was talking about with the draft signees, Jackie's like, I feel like the analysis has been pretty shallow. What do you guys think? And we're like, well, what's prediction time?
No, so, I didn't mean that. I know.
I just feel like that's an example of you being 100% right.
I just feel like I saw that tweet like 15 times. Like, oh, yeah. The Avs are doing it because they have no picks. It's just like, you know. That's funny.
I was just like, wow. We just were like, all right, well, yeah, you're probably right.
That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, let's do some bold predictions. Last week we had Evan. Your bold prediction was that they would have a lossless week. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure that was not something that happened. And then, Jackie, you had Byram scoring 10 goals, and I'm pretty sure that that's something that did happen.
Yeah.
So you logged yourself a bold prediction point, so congratulations. Ezra had Helm scoring a goal, which unfortunately
no.
Ezra's getting the buzzer even though he's not here. Ezra, that was wrong. So let's get into them. I'll start with you, Jackie. What's your bold prediction this week?
Oh, boy. Is Newhook scoring one goal? Is that bold enough?
I mean, these what, seven games without a point now? Something like that? Newhook goal.
I think on its own it's not bold.
How about a power play goal? Is that even crazier?
I almost want to say game-winning goal. I think I'm ready to go there. It's a game-winning goal.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. All right, Evan, your turn.
I'm with Jackie. I'm liking the idea of seeing how that LA game plays out this weekend.
Okay.
Really giving them a good idea of how that's going to play out, and where that really will leave them and where they stand heading into the game. I think they're going to need some dirty goals in that LA game. So therefore, I'm going to say Andrew Cogliano gets 2 goals against the Kings.
Wow.
Ooh, 2 goals. Who gets 2 goals? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Cogliano.
Holy Moses. That is a bold prediction. I love it. Oh, I'm not putting money on that one.
That's fine. You don't need to.
Pay out real big if you did.
It would be really good.
That's like saying like the mafia doesn't exist. That's me saying I'm not betting on that one. Jacob, your turn. What's your bold prediction?
Jonas Johansson shuts out the Ducks on Sunday.
Ooh, JoJo shutout.
Wow, okay.
It's the day after the Kings game. He's got to play it, right?
I don't think Georgiev has played either Ducks game because I remember it was Francouz and JoJo. So, yeah, that could be a likely one. Would it be bold to say if Francouz – I think they really wanted to play him one game. Well,
If it is Francois, I get to shift it to him. Their backup goalie shuts out. Okay. The Ducks. that's my bold prediction.
Okay, I like that. No, I'm not sure that Francois would be necessarily ready by then, but I like that hedging on the Ducks because they played their backup against them twice.
Yeah, I like that too. Well, getting back to Jackie's new hook game-winning goal, on Twitter, it's been official breaking news. According to source, Newhook is the next Tyson Jost. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think we went there the other week. Now to be fair, he hasn't had any points since we tried to, you know, build him up. So he is in a little bit of a rut. But like I said, like he's already passed Jost's career high in points. So to me, it's just not a comparison. He's clearly more skilled.
Yeah.
Look at our managing editor wrote a comment. My computer crashed round two.
Well, it's good that we got your bold prediction.
Yeah, before you crashed. And one more thing on your last week bold prediction, Jackie. You also mentioned that Byram got a bonus in his contract if he got to 10 goals. So I was actually fortunate enough to be at the game when he scored his 10th goal. And I was just in the crowd going, money, money. It was awesome.
I think it's like 212,000. It's like some really specific number, but
you know, that one felt good. And you know, he was buying dinner too, for sure, that night, even though they lost. Yeah. Thank you four or three, not two,
three and a half.
Yeah. For joining me today. This has been the Mile High Hockey Lab. Oh, Evan, another great comment. Look at that. Bone bar, money bags. But thank you for listening. This is the Mile High Hockey Lab. Please go give us a like and a follow on your preferred streaming platform. Every episode is available the following day of the live stream here on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe, turn on your alerts so you know every time we go live. Hopefully the Avalanche are able to win 4 of 6 games. And when we talk to you next week, we're talking about who they play in the first round and previewing the much-anticipated quest for a repeat. My name is Adrian Hernandez. This is the Mile High Hockey Lab. Thank you all for listening and watching. Go Avs.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.